Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 220 with a live podcast from TIAA. This is Beyond the Uniform's very first live podcast, and it took place in downtown Denver at the TIAA building, which, if you've been to downtown Denver, towers over the city. For those of you who are not familiar with TIAA, it is a 100-year-old company that is dedicated to helping those who teach, heal, and serve achieve financial well-being. TIAA is the leading provider of financial services in the academic, research, medical, and cultural fields, serving more than 5 million people. In this live podcast, I speak with two TIAA team employees about their military transition, and it was an honor to join each of them on stage. There were a whole host of people at TIAA who worked to put this together, but I wanted to say a special thanks in particular to Kadeem Collins. Kadeem came across my interview with Frank Van Buren all the way back in episode number 39. Where we talked about Frank's 18 years in financial services at Wells Fargo. That set in motion a journey that started nearly 6 months ago, putting together this first live show, and it took a lot of work, so I appreciate Kadeem and everyone at TIAA's work in making this happen. If you enjoy this format of a panel or a live panel, write to us at Beyond the Uniform, let us know, and we'll try to do more episodes just like this. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Joseph and Brian at TIAA.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate the whole TIAA team having me here. Special thanks to Kadeem for getting me out here. He woke up, flew out at 4 a.m. local to be here. And as soon as we drop the mic, he's got to run to the airport to get back. But I think that's pretty representative of what he's done for the last 3 months to make this happen. Pulling everyone in and just, everyone was juggling so many things that he kept the ball rolling. So special thanks to you for making this happen. Just for context to add on what Kadeem said, we are recording this for the podcast. It's the first live podcast that we've done, so it's pretty exciting for me. What I do at Beyond the Uniform is just my quick story. I was in the Navy on submarines for 5 years, got out, went to business school, and didn't have a clue about what options there were out there. My first quarter at business school, I sat down with an investment banker, a classmate of mine, and I literally thought he was a teller at a bank. I never heard of what investment banking was. And over the course of 2 years, kind of got a sense of the landscape. And as my casual attire probably indicates, went into the entrepreneurship route and have been doing that for the last 10 years. And about 3 years ago, I reconnected with a bunch of people I served with who were still in. And there was about 20 guys and gals there, and they were all complaining about, I'm getting out soon, what am I gonna do? And it kind of reminded me of the time, 7 years earlier, the same conundrum that I faced. And so I started thinking of like, okay, how do we try to chip away at this problem? And what I started was Beyond the Uniform. It's just a side project. Myself and four other people do this on the nights and weekends. And we've done over 220 episodes now. And the goal is to help people who are on active duty in the military start to get a sense of what they'll do when they get out. And the main way that we do that is by meeting with people who are now what we call civilians, people who are no longer in the military but did serve in the military. And it's a great format for me because I don't have to know anything, I just have to ask questions. And my goal is just to zoom in and get a sense for, okay, explain to someone in the military, which is a way of saying explain to, an 8-year-old in some senses, because they don't have the civilian vocabulary yet. Explain to someone in the military what you do, what's your day-to-day look like, how did you get here, what are some signs that they may like this, they may hate it, how could they succeed in this role? And I've been really fortunate. I met with the former CEO of Pepsi, who was a Marine. I met with NFL players. I met with ESPN photographers. And I don't really have a horse in the game or at the end of the game in terms of, I think veterans can do absolutely anything. I think that oftentimes they underestimate what it takes to achieve anything. And so the goal is just to spotlight. And hopefully for the couple hundred people that listen to each episode, they can say, you know what, this sounded kind of interesting. Let me dig a little bit deeper. Or I know that I don't want to do that. and or this sounds like a great company for me to work at. So it's a real honor to meet with both of you, and the format will be, most of these questions are designed for an active duty military audience. I understand that's not all of the people here and people watching remotely, but really appreciate your coming out and hope that if you didn't serve in the military, maybe this gives you a little bit of taste of the perspective that they bring to the table and what they've had to overcome and do to get here. So with that, I'm going to read a really short bio for both of my guests here today. I'm going to keep it short because we're going to cover some of their bio in more of an interactive format. I'll try to keep the panel to maybe 30, 40 minutes, and then we'll open it up to Q&A if you have questions. I've got some backup questions in case that backfires, and so that way you don't have too much pressure to ask questions if you don't have any. So we'll start with Joseph. Joseph Kanatobi. Did I get that right?
Kanatobi.
My phonetic spelling here. Joseph Kanatobi. He's a financial services consultant here at TIA. He started out in the U.S. Marine Corps, where he served as a sergeant and forward observer for over 7 years. After his military service, he worked at J.P. Morgan Chase as a financial advisor before joining TIA. And Brian Fox is a client relationship consultant in wealth management here at TIA as well. He started out in the Peace Corps, after which he served in the Navy for 4 years. He has worked at TIAA for over 14 years. And so the first thing I wanted to start off with is we connected on the phone a couple weeks ago. You both have very different stories about how you first entered into the military. And maybe, Joe, starting with you, I'd love to hear what led you to the military, and how would you briefly describe what that experience was like?
I was actually born into the military, so didn't really have too much choice. Fourth generation that served. And, as soon as I was old enough to remember, I was already, being brought in towards the military. Last time I saw my father before he passed, he had me promising that I would join the any military service. I didn't specifically say Marine Corps, but I knew which direction I was going to head. I started a career in a community bank here in Denver, was making really good money for my age, and was really reluctant to drop down to a private salary, which is below minimum wage, actually, back then. And got a call from my uncle when I was 26 years old, and said pretty much the family's not going to talk to you anymore until you join. That pretty much made up my mind. And that was just about the time that 9/11 happened. And shortly after 9/11, I was overweight, wasn't immediately available. So I made the decision on that day that I would join. It took about 2 years to lose 30 pounds and get into the physical condition to be successful in the Marine Corps. And joined up and shipped out.
So as a Navy guy, I can say this, but Joe kind of set a high bar for himself going to the Marines. If he wanted to phone it in and get in easy, he'd go Air Force, in my opinion. But he chose probably the highest bar to overcome with the Marines, and just their physical standard, their mental standard, and just the entire package that they look for. They're exceptionally selective in who they find, and so it's great to hear how you got in there and how you honored your father's wish, but also the extent to which you pushed yourself to lose that weight and to get ready for that incredible transition.
Yeah.
And Brian, how about you?
I went into the military with a college degree. When I graduated college, and I set going into the Peace Corps. Put my application in. It took me about a year and a half to get accepted. I got a big old package mail. I was hoping Eastern Europe, because I'm a huge soccer fan, so I was like, awesome. Here it comes, Kenya, Africa. So I immediately started thinking, AIDS epidemic over there, so I started getting real scared, but went through the in-country training, got over there, started living in a town called Naivasha, Kenya, Africa, which is on the northeast side of Nairobi, and I was literally the first day I got there. I was sweating bullets. I was afraid I was gonna die, get bit by a spider. Seven people left the very first day. I'm going home. Like, oh my God. And what really upset me the most was seeing the refugees coming in from Mogadishu. At that time, General ID was stealing aid from the locals there, and seeing them come in, you know, battered and bruised. Our own Peace Corps volunteers were beaten up in a town called Mombasa, which is on the east coast of Africa. So I elected to get out, come back in, and I said, you know what, I didn't want to let anybody make me be afraid, pushing forward my goals and objectives to help people. So I freaked out my dad, came back one day, and he goes, how was your day? I go, well, I joined the Navy. And he started laughing, no way. Throwing the hat. Next thing you know, I was off to Great Lakes boot camp, training to go in, and then went in. First class in my A school, picked the furthest place from Colorado I could. That was, you know, Yokosuka, Japan. I was TAD to the ship, USS Independence. And we made several deployments to the Arabian Gulf, you know, helping deal with the Saddam Hussein, the Operation Southern Watch, all that fun stuff. But it is the military that really helped me forge, you know, strength in my own self and not rely on others to kind of be there for me. I had to rely on myself. That's the one thing I always fall back on. Strength and fortitude and who you are, not what others think you are.
And for each of you, as you, we'll start with you, but you know, the military is a very challenging work environment, very strenuous, you know, oftentimes a lot of deployments and time away from family, and there's a lot of security, there's a lot of built-in training, there's a lot of, I think, incentives to stay in the military. So I was curious, how did you approach that decision of knowing when you wanted to get out?
For me, you know, I had met my wife over there, and we got married. Got married in Vegas. Get married in Japan. Too much paperwork. And the military does have its benefits, but for me, I always wanted to work in the corporate world. My wife didn't want me to be in the military, so we started looking at getting out in '97. What my dad would do, send me much of my paper clippings in the mail so I would look at potential job opportunities. I had one deep desire to work in the sporting goods industry, in particular Nike. So I even put little notes on my bunk and my berthing area in the ship. I will work for Nike, just do it, do all that stuff. Come back home. There's a big old ad in the paper said Nike hiring for the Castle Rock outlet. Sure enough, I knew I was going to get got a job there. But the preparation for it really was talking to my dad, who had been in the Navy, he'd been in the Korean War. He just said, you just got to do what he feels right for you, and now you have your wife and you have your kids. You got to do what's right for them. You can't be going out and playing soccer on the weekends anymore. You got family to take care of. So I made the decision with my wife that, you know, we pursue leaving the military, staying in the reserves at that point. It was, that one, it was, you know, nowadays, I guess I get a do-over. My son's in the Air Force.
No, I didn't realize that.
So I can actually tell him.
I'm kind of regretting that Air Force. Things to clear up before you back to the Air Force.
But I think it's, I get a second chance with him to help him with the things I wished I had back then that I know I have now, or he has now. I can help him solidify from ground when he gets out.
Yep.
Of that.
That's great. That's great.
So I guess with me, my story is quite a bit different. I was actually here recruiting in Denver in the Aurora office, and I met my wife, and while I was out here, then they sent me back to 29 Palms, California, and then I came back out here for recruiting. That separation was pretty rough. I mean, newly married and having to be away and then coming back. So shortly after that, I did an appointment to Iraq in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And it wasn't a rough deployment. Our unit was, you know, involved, but we weren't taking a lot of casualties. And so she was pretty comfortable. And I came back, and shortly after that, they said, well, it's time to pack up and go again. And I supported the Western Fleet, Westpac, and did naval gun registrations for them. The Florida Observers observe naval gunfire as well. If they're not registered within 90 days, they have to be docked and reset all their gyros. So they sent us out there, sent us back home, and then they dropped paperwork that we were going to go to Iraq, and my wife got a little nervous about it. So wasn't home much when my son, shortly after my son was born, so I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with him. And my wife was pregnant with our daughter, and it was a rough decision. She threatened that if I signed a new contract that she'd divorce me, so I signed a 2-year extension the next day. Don't threaten Marie. It doesn't work. And after that 2-year extension, I actually decided to call it quits. But to be honest with you, I still fought with the decision. I wanted to stay in. I thought, you know, the work I was doing was, you know, productive and was helping. And but also realized that you gotta be home sometime with your family time. So I didn't want to miss out on my daughter's childhood, much like I did my son's. So that was a real decision on moving. Now, I kind of already knew that title was limited in the Marine Corps anyway, because the Marine Corps bubbled up to about 300,000, and normally we're about 150,000. As Iraqi Freedom, OIF-2, started winding down, it started restrictive standards and started moving Marines out that, you know, I had a bunch of great Marines that, because they had tattoos in the wrong places, they were told, hey, you're not allowed to sign a new contract. So they really started downsizing it, and I knew, well, they're trying to reduce bodies. I already have a couple deployments, you know, it's about time. So that was the real deciding factor, was the family and seeing them downsize the force as much as
possible. One thing I've observed in that couple hundred of these interviews is Joe said a phrase was, it wasn't a rough deployment. And I've learned that the calibration of most people who served in the military, that the bar is pretty high to consider something a rough deployment. So I think that I just want to point out, you said it wasn't a rough deployment. I think by most people's standards, the tempo of life and pace of life, it just compared to the life I now lead in Denver, the proximity to death, honestly, is so much higher than I'll ever experience again. But I've heard people use a phrase like that, like Joe said, which is like, oh, it wasn't that rough. And the truth is like, okay, you got to kind of, you have to turn the volume up sometimes on a military veteran on what they're saying, because that proximity to craziness is so small that they sometimes underplay what that experience could be like. And then one other thing I just wanted to point out is in doing so many of these interviews, I think it's interesting because so many military veterans that I interview, and this is people who served for 3 years and people who served for 20 years, they face an immense amount of guilt when they leave. They face this thought of, I'm getting out and my brothers and sisters are still serving. Or, I only served for 10 years, which is like a mind-boggling statement to think of what they, you know, you go through for a 10-year or 5-year period. And I just think it's like something to be aware of for all of us. I think, you know, for me, re-engaging with this community and interviewing 200 people, a reminder of like these are incredible people that have a something in them that gives them a desire to serve and to give back and to protect, and then to feel guilty about not doing enough on that. And yeah, those were two things that kind of stood out for me. I'm wondering, Joe, for you, so when you did make that decision to get out, what was the job search like? Like, what was that very first job search like?
I tried to avoid going back into finance. I thought it would be boring or not as productive. I tried to search around. I went to Halliburton. They were talking about sending me over to Iraq again, but with much larger paycheck. And of course, that defeated the purpose of why I came out. I went to a security firm here locally that was very heavily involved with veterans. It sounded like a pretty decent job, but you know, I'd have to travel a lot, things like that. So one of my friends inside of the unit that I was in when I came back, I was still in the reserves and at Buckley. He was actually at Chase, and when he went on deployment, they paid him his full-time benefits, everything, just like he was still there. So, a company like that, that'd be great to work for, well, until I went to work. worked there, but, so I decided to hop on with them, and, you know, I started out as a banker, and then they said I'd be a real good fit for a financial advisor, just went that route. Their values didn't quite align with my values, you know, how I thought helping the client was more important than some of the numbers that they thought were more important. And that's when I started looking around and found TIAA through a friend that worked at Chase that worked here, and he talked a little bit about their values and, you know, how their lineage being built from Andrew Carnegie's wishes, and decided that was something that I could fit into, mine with my values.
That's great. That's another kind of trend. It sounds like with Joseph, when he got out, that, you know, the common trend is you do what you're familiar with. And for a lot of people in the military, there's just not a lot of time or insight into what's out there. So a lot of people start kind of, you know, let's look at Halliburton, let's look at government contracting, let's look at doing the thing that I did in the military right outside of the military. And it takes a little while to uncover the just thousands and thousands of different jobs. I think for me, you know, in the Navy, it was basically submarines, surface ship, a pilot, a Navy SEAL, which was never an option. Marine Corps, which is probably not an option for me either. And so it's like five job options. So it's a pretty simple selection. And then you are presented with no limit to those sorts of options. I'm wondering just to maybe, for you, Brian, what was it that attracted you to the financial services industry?
That actually just kind of happened to me. So I was working for Nike, and my wife and I had separated, divorced. It goes back to the lifestyle you live while you're in the military. It's way much different than as a civilian. Just dealing with the hurdles and the constraints that presented. So we were separated, and so I was trying to be as close to my kid as I could. And I relocated with Nike out to Wisconsin. They started downsizing, and I always kept my resume in my backpack. I always had like 10 copies of my resume, just because you never know. It's flight philosophy. You got to be prepared, right? So I'm out this mall in Wisconsin, and there's this company having interviews. And I put my resume down, and they said, "Oh, you've got a business degree. Well, have you ever thought about finance?" Finance in school. Never thought of it. Next thing you know, I'm taking a test. And, oh, you got a job. We want to hire you at Merrill Lynch. Okay. So it just really happened to me right then and there. If I had not been prepared, I would have probably missed out. But then my financial journey kind of continued on. I got registered, Merrill Lynch relocated. I went out to with them. Me and my son went out there, and they cut that job. So I came back to Colorado and went to work for right down the street here. And that was a sales, 100% sales commission, which I didn't feel like was benefiting the client. You know, take care of the client. You can't really push your product on a client when they just need simple insights. So I was talking to a guy who was in the same company, and he said, I just left GIAA. I said, go check him out. And, you know, I put in my resume online, had an interview, and here I am 14 years later.
You mentioned kind of when you were at Nike, the differences between life outside of the military and inside. I'm curious for both of you, what stands out? I'm especially thinking of someone who may listen to this eventually who's on active duty right now. What were some of the more surprising aspects that you didn't know to expect about what life would be like once you took that uniform off?
Sure, I'll go first.
Marines are always the first in, right?
You know, one thing I always tell people that they don't quite grasp is when you're deployed, people are like, oh, it's super stressful. Oh, actually, it's not. Your life's pretty simplified at that point. Get up in the morning, shave your face, get your boots on, get your rifle, head out the door, keep yourself awake, keep yourself alive, go home, go to sleep, do it the next morning. You don't have to worry about bills. You don't have to worry about all these other commitments. The only thing you have to worry about is taking care of the guy next to you, taking care of yourself, getting out the door and getting back in. And a lot of people say, crazy, yeah? I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, there was a lot of details in there. There's a lot of stuff going on. But you don't have to multitask all these different facets of your life throughout the day. You got one job. Go do it. Out here, you got family life, you got the bills, you got work, you got all these different facets of your life that you have to keep in balance and keep in check. Where over there, you have one job to do. And that's a big transition. You come back, and, you know, you're used to a different kind of stress and a different level of stress, but you know how to face that stress. Where here, you got to deal with multiple plates of stress coming at you from different directions, and you got to learn to balance where your effort and where your energy goes, and, you know, start multitasking more, become more detail-oriented on the different things that are going on simultaneously, where when you're in a firefight, there's only one thing going on. There's only one thing that gains your attention. And out here, there's your attention's different, 10 different places all at once.
Yeah.
And you got to learn to balance that. Even when you're in garrison, in the Marine Corps, you're pretty focused on the one task that's at hand. Yeah, you got multiple things going on throughout the day. You got your flight book and your checklist, all your stuff. But you're pretty focused on one event at a time.
Yeah.
Where here, you got to focus on all 5 events or all 10 events simultaneously, still be able to master one at a time.
Yeah, it's something I hadn't thought of, but it is, I think of it as like the complexity of a deployment. But it was, in essence, a simple thing. Like when I was on a submarine, it was, you know, do I want to go forward on the submarine, backwards, up or down? You can't really even go left or right. It's not that big. It just, everything is constrained in some way. But that's like a really good point of the ability to just focus on the mission and focus on one thing. And then I can imagine the abrasiveness of the transition then to unlimited possibilities in every single aspect of your life.
Yeah.
The routine.
Yeah.
Beyond deployment, several deployments. Especially when you're going on a ship and you're going to hostile territory. We had President Clinton come on board our ship on day 1 and said, you guys are going over the Gulf. So, you know, it's just routine for us.
Mm.
You know, you got 2 gunships out there. When we pass through the Straits of Hormuz, you got these gunships on us from Iran, and they're, you know, we're like, it's just routine for us to be, you know, first priority is protection of the shield. Mm-hmm. Protect the guy on your left, protect the guy on your right. They watch your back, you watch theirs.
Yeah.
That's how it is. It's just routine. When you get out, you start thinking about getting out of the military. You have to think about, oh, I got to get my resume. I got to make sure I have all my college credits. Am I ready to, you know, what do I even want to do? I even did the book, What Calls Your Parachute.
Yeah.
And, you know, it said I should be, you know, in support sales. So I'm like, oh, it's right in my alley. But it didn't, it wasn't in where I ended up, which is all fine and dandy. The military helped me to prepare for the adjustment to come your way. You don't have to focus on all things coming in at you from different sides. You just focus on what's ahead of you.
Yeah.
And here you, in civilian life, you have all kinds of stressors. So in the military, you don't think about it. Stress in the street, you know, or, you know, when taps go down, you got to stand attention.
Yeah.
When the anthem starts playing, you better go to attention. Here, people don't think about that. But again, the routine you have, and not focusing on five different things, six different things.
That's great. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things I miss most about the military is defined structure of everything that you do, and each one of the events that you participate or each one of the evolutions that you're in, it has certain checkpoints in it, you know, the TLEs, everything that you're supposed to learn about it or do. In civilian life, there's no such thing as, you know, your TLEs or any of your checklists or any of your structure. You have to create your own structure, and that's one thing I think what I've done that's really helped out my life is take that from the military and find a way to implement it inside of my personal life, is, you know, build my own structure into my own day, build my own task list, build my own, and that helped me manage that transition very well.
Yeah, even if we even would PT together in the military, you know, physical exercise together. Here you're like, oh, I gotta join this gym, or no, don't join that one, that was not good. Or,
yeah.
I'll work out with this guy, and, no, I can't meet you at that time. Come on, just get a routine, you know, have a routine, and for me, that's the same with Joe, to incorporate that routine mechanism in my day-to-day. I get up at a certain time. Even my dad, before he passed, he would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. do his little workouts, making breakfast, to have it, I'll never forget, to have it, I know everyone.
That's great.
Military ingrains it in you for your own protection.
Mm-hmm. What about we've touched on this a couple different times, but it's like we've talked about the positive attributes you brought with the military civilian career, and it sounds like structure, routine, discipline, incredible resolve and determination to get a task done. And I know in other interviews it's connection, a sense of service. Like, there's so many positive things that carry forward. Was there anything that either of you had to unlearn from the military, or something you had to let go of to be successful in your civilian career?
For me,
and on audio that our listeners could see Joseph's knowing grin and chuckle right now.
For me, if there wasn't anything I had to unlearn, than just the acronyms we use and, you know, different the jovialness of our candor with our buddies, you know, it's a lot different then than it is here. You know, in a corporate structure, you gotta keep things PG, if you will. But there's really nothing that I had to unlearn. I don't think I would want to.
Yeah.
I had to stop using the Marine Corps' the entire vocabulary, pretty much. And start using the civilian vocabulary. So I'm learning that windows are no longer portals. I won't mention what a mouth was. But all those small terms that we used every day in the military, they don't apply in the civilian world. Sense of humor, I had to calm down my sense of humor quite a bit from what it was in the Marine Corps. And I was very discipline-oriented leadership. so very authoritarian. That doesn't apply to students in the world either. So interacting with coworkers when they failed to accomplish something, an entirely different reaction than what I would have had when I had my job. So I learned a lot of the, you know, normal Marine Corps steps to overcome discipline issues or failure to accomplish issues. So I'm learning that and approaching it in a whole new fashion, which is much more gentler and quite a bit more peaceful.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, I want to talk about what you're doing now, and maybe start with you, Brian, with having been here for 14 years. If you were talking to someone who's in the military right now, how would you explain what TIA is and what as an organization you do?
So it's good that you mentioned that. So there are a few people in my son's unit that have asked me questions about what's it like working in, where you work at, finance, what do you have to do, you got to take tests, we've got to prepare this way, and I just tell them, you got to look for a company that has the same founding principles that you base your work ethic on. That's why I joined TIA. They do truly care about taking care of the client. My work ethic in the military then carries over here. I come in early and I leave late. He said he was in the military. I don't leave until I get this last thing done. I'm telling my son, he's no way, shape, or form going to work with my hands. He's right, work with a computer. Him staying still the same philosophy. Work with what makes you feel that you're contributing to the greater good. TIA allows me to touch clients in a way that I can help them through difficulties, hardships, and achieving their goals. And that's where the gratification comes in when the client says, you know, you really helped me out. Thank you. You call me all the time and tell me this and tell me that. It's awesome. You're awesome. You send an email and thank you. It's not necessary, but it's that. The gratification you get from the client and say, thank you. Like when in the military, even nowadays, when you walk down the street, you know you're a veteran. They say, thank you for your service. You know, that right then and there is, you know, awesome.
I love the translation of service, like service in the military and then serving in a very different way of clients and taking care of them and protecting them and keeping them safe. It's cool to see that common thread throughout all of it.
Yeah.
Anything you would add on that?
Covered a lot of bases there. I would say the service of the client is what drew me into working with TIAA versus some other organizations. And when you're in the military, that's what a lot of it is about, is you're protecting either citizens of the United States or, you know, people of other countries that are in dire need of help. Well, on the flip side of that, when you come back, kind of miss that service-oriented behavior, and when you come into finance, a lot of people probably wouldn't agree that it is some sort of service that is helping them through their lives. It is something that's important, and there's some gratification behind being able to help somebody achieve a retirement goal that may have not have achieved it if they hadn't had interaction with you and the other part of your team. And that's another thing that's different is we work as teams inside of helping clients here, where a lot of organizations it's individuals. And that team aspect is very reminiscent of the military. It was never just you that accomplished a mission or failed a mission. Your team. And same thing here.
And I'd love to zoom in a little bit about each of your roles, and again, for if someone was on active duty, they're not as familiar with civilian titles. Joseph, starting with you, you're a financial services consultant. What does that mean? What does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
And actually, we're in the same role. We're both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Private wealth management.
Yeah. Yep. So we actually help clients on everything on their accounts related to any service, any operational tasks. We take care of them where their advisor does the advice and planning. Mm-hmm. So we really dig deep into the nuts and bolts of how their accounts work and, you know, all the day-to-day activities. Majority of the time, the customers will contact us for any requests instead of their advisors. And then if we ever run into a situation where they need advice on, you know, what fund to move or what to move to, that's when we give the advisors.
And that's helping each person reach their own unique financial goal or whatever they're wanting to do with their money.
Yep. Yeah, whatever their need is.
Yeah, you know, it kind of goes back to the military where our job was protecting the asset. And I feel like that is one of the great benefits I have here is I'm a part of the team that helps protect the asset. And that range from me talking to a client once a week, once a day, once a month, once a year. In fact, me knowing that client, getting to know them, know their families, their kids, their histories, their goals, objectives, and they entrust us in that. That for me is a big deal.
Yep.
This client's trusting me with their life. It's like my brothers in the military. They're trusting me with their life. So I get to talk to the client. It's where the excitement comes in. Maybe I guess one of the, if I were to look at a negative attribute of myself, it's my work ethic, if it carries over, I can stay here until 10 o'clock at night. Still doing what I need to do to take care of my accounts. That's the gratification is you get to talk to the client, the phone ring, pick it up, you're going to be able to help somebody, no matter what it is. We have the training, they give us great training here. You know, it's a great company to work for, the benefits are fantastic. You cannot put yourself out there thinking, oh, I don't know how to succeed. They'll guide you.
I love that as a contrast to my own career path in entrepreneurship is something I find with people on active duty is an advantage of them going to a very established company like TIA is having a great training process. And I think that in the military, we get accustomed to, they have training for everything. On our submarine, when you use the restroom, there is literally a placard with instructions on how to operate the toilet. I mean, there is training for everything. And I think we get used to that and thrive on that. And there's a lot of types of companies where you go in and you're left to fend for yourself. And I think a lot of people in the military could gravitate towards an established company where there is a great training process and there's a lot of mentorship and there's a lot of formal education to go along with it.
Yeah. That's a great attribute. Having been here at TIA, you know, I've really started to escalate my footprint on, I get the chance to help my peers, my colleagues, mentor for them.
Yeah.
I get to mentor people in colleges, maybe at one of the universities here. We're looking at programs there. And that really is really the tip of the iceberg for me is how TIA is really expanding. You know, my dad would say, your reach should extend your grasp. That's what I feel like TIA is helping me to do as a person, as an employee, and as a team member of the team we have here.
That's great. I want to honor the time commitment here, so I do have other questions, but I'd love to, if it's possible, open up here in the team that's remote to see if there's any questions to that you would like to have answered.
I do have a question. Want to jump in, Chad? So the question I had was, and either one you can take it, in terms of engaging the veteran community since leaving the military, how have you been able to do that? And, you know, Justin, you have a podcast and reaching thousands of people throughout the country. But Brian and Joe, how have you guys been able to, and have you been able to engage the veteran community here in Denver?
There you go. I'll
do it.
Number one, I have a large network of veterans that I personally am involved with, and that was the only way to actually transition from military life to civilian life. especially people that have had combat tours struggle with coming back to the civilian world. They have a lot of guilt. They have a lot of issues that you can't really talk about with other people. And coming back to a network of friends that either got out before me, got out at the same time with me, or some of them got out after me, and still being closely connected with them. Yeah, we may talk about things over a beer, or we might do it in a barbecue. But, you know, having that support level was very important to me when I first got out. But knowing that Marines, they never leave a man behind, you have to continue that because there's always somebody coming up. There's always somebody that's going to need help. So I was very involved with that. Now, mine was more informal at first. And I wouldn't even say that it was helping them as much as it was just being involved. You know, you don't have to do anything special or say anything special, just being there. And I think it helped me a lot too. So being involved in a tight network, and of course all my friends, they have friends that are coming out too that are joining our network and, you know, growing. There's nothing formal about it. Also being involved inside of our ERG group, I was a part of the DFW, and I'm part of the American Legion, and I have all those connections there. Not as excited about, you know, the DFW or the American Legion as what I was when I started joining our ERG here, because I felt like this had some potential to actually go out to the community and do a lot of events that could help veterans monetarily, or just, you know, just knowing that there's an organization there is help.
Yeah, so similar. Since I've been here, I was telling earlier about my son's involvement with homeless veterans. His passion for me, it really hurts me. And go back to the guilt thing when they left, you know, there is guilt. One of your veteran brothers living on the street. So there's that initiative, and being in the ERG group here, we're looking at new initiatives now where we can partnership with our building here and Coalition for the Homeless here in Denver to look at maybe seeing what we can do to kind of help at least get them off the street, or if not, to prepare them for that event should they choose to do that. That is very exciting here. It's kind of a new thing that's just for us here, and I spent time at the VA hospital, hanging out with the vets, talking to them. I'm also a member of my ship's Facebook group. We have reunions every year, one coming up. There is a huge network from old to new. That brings it back to what Joe was saying, that camaraderie back, and you know, you don't need to say anything. Just laugh and joke around. Get to revisit those acronyms you used back in the military days that you don't get to use so frequently here in the corporate world. That is in of itself the greatest thing I'm looking forward to here in the next few years is our involvement and footprint.
Thank you. Another question.
But first of all, thank you for your service, both of you. Breathing. I spoke to a friend. We have a few friends that are military now, vets, and their adjustments to home, kind of questions to ask you. And there's a reoccurring theme, and it's, I think you guys kind of touched upon it. During deployment, you're thinking about that day. Maybe your long-term goal is to finish the deployment. Now you're both in financial services. Well, your goal might not be realized for 30, 40 years. Your clients come to you and they're 30s and 40s, they don't know if they obtained that goal when they're 70, by the time they're 70 or retired. These gentlemen have the same kind of issues. Their goals, they might not be 30 years, but they have projects that are 3 years. and they struggle to kind of figure out how do I get through my day-to-day, no, I won't realize my goal for 3 years. Yeah, if you've struggled with that yourselves, or you have, if you have, you thought about how you can deal with that.
There is a book by Marine Corps General about Lewis B. Pooler. It's called Chessy. And one of the things that I always thought about, in our, that's part of the Marine Corps reading list, so I actually read that when I was a junior Marine. One of the things I always think about is one of the Chessy Pooler's comments there is the South Pacific wasn't won by one battle. And it's all those small objectives that got us from pushed all the way out to Hawaii, almost to the mainland of Japan, is taking one beach at a time. And each one of those are the goals. The long-term goal was reaching the shoreline of Japan, but it was only through accomplishing each one of those beachings that the Marine Corps did that. And I kind of took that to heart and said, well, yeah, my goal is 30 years away, but I have another beach to take today. And each one of those, you have to kind of move forward with. But Chessy Pooler is amazing, man. You get the opportunity. He's one of the most decorated Marines ever. Some of his comments inside that book, you got to read them 3 or 4 times before you're like, wow, there's a lot more inside of that. Well, I did, and I'm a dumb Marine, so maybe you get it off the first time.
Yeah, it's similar to what Joe was saying. In the Navy, your first objective is protection of the ship. I was a firefighter, and they call general quarters, and you think it's just normal training. You focus on your firefighting suit, on your breathing apparatus. My dad always said, hey, have you hit any knee knockers lately? No knee knockers, so the ship, prevent it from sinking with watertight integrity, you can bend down certain hatches. So they have had the hatch, the floor comes up to about that, so they can shut the door. If you don't focus on the door in front of you by looking ahead, you're going to bust your shin wide open. They call them knee knockers. And the same with the ladders. You're going up on a ladder like that, you're going down, and when you've got a firefighting suit on, it's very hard. If you focus on you don't focus on the rung, the ladder in front of you, you're going to slip and you're going to hit every one of your buddies down below you. So the goal, the objective was to focus on what's in front of you. You got 30 rungs in the ladder and you're focusing on those 30, not the one in front of you. You know, you're not going to get to where you're going. You're going to fall back, go back again, etc. The same with the knee knockers. The knee knockers are more, they definitely brought their attention right then and there. And you can always hear when somebody hit one, too. There'll be a vocabulary that you would say, cuss like a sailor. That's pure evidence of it.
One more question.
Go ahead.
Kathy, do you want to go? And Charlotte? We need to unmute Charlotte.
We have one more on the call.
There we go.
On the call. It's open up now for Abram.
Hey, guys. I know we're at time, but I'm on the IAS side of it. I actually lead the training and development programs for that side of the organization. We have a rotational program where we take inexperienced folks who are not in our business that, say, aspire to become an advisor someday, but they don't have that experience. And we've heard that these folks have to be located in either Charlotte, Denver, or Dallas for 4 years. And at the end of that, they may have to move to another city, any number of places available. But the former program manager had said that military was, for folks, were a challenge because of that need to relocate. Any thoughts there about, you know, career progression for you guys or just military folks in general, that if that move or something like that was a requirement, is that a real obstacle for us to think through, or is it about the opportunity more so than the location?
I mean, I'm a single guy now, but when I was married, yeah, it was an obstacle, you know, one of the reasons why I left was because, you know, she didn't want to bounce around. She didn't want me gone every 6 or 7 months at a time. My kids, too. But I definitely think that is something you could probably look at. And if relocation is possible, Are you okay with it? They're military people. They're gonna say, hey, you tell them up front. They're gonna be honest with you. Let you know how they feel about that possible relocation. We face possible relocation here. I think every job you possibly could be relocated, whether by force or by you just want to live in a different city, your wife, your spouse, or whatever. If you just have a family become ill, you need to go and live with them to take care of them. But I think it's definitely something you could probably look at and making sure that the individuals are aware that, you know, hey, 4-year enlistment or the 4-year accelerated advisor program is something that's not going to file yet. Is,
yep, that is.
4 years, prepare. If not, you know, maybe is there's an opportunity for them to be in flux within the current structure they're in.
And with the Marine Corps, it wasn't negotiable. There was no, where did you want to go? You got orders. You went where you needed to go, regardless of what your situation was. So you kind of learn that your CVAC is your home. Where your CVAC is, that's where home is. And if I took up root in Denver, I think it would be exactly the same as if I took up root in another city. Home is what you made it. You make your home. So if it's in Seattle, Washington, Denver, Colorado, yeah, the move sucks. But guess what? Your home, once you settle in, that is your home.
Kathy, you
want to
go ahead and
ask? Thanks, guys.
Yes. I have a comment that I want to share with everyone. First of all, I thought TIAA was the only organization that had that number of acronyms, but I see the military has a lot more. Because some of those acronyms that y'all are throwing out, I'm like, I'm going to have to look that up on Google. And then on the behalf of the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, I wanted to say thank you to Brian and Joe for representing TIAA and your military service so well. I really enjoyed participating in the podcast today. And Justin, thank you for selecting and participating in this with TIAA. I think this is an amazing opportunity to highlight the importance and the focus that TIAA has on military and veterans, and that we could be an employer of choice for this particular community. So thank you for joining us today, and continue to do this great work that you're doing. So thank you, everyone, our core young people, and those who were able to attend today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ken.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our director of outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.